This is a production of Cornell University.
GPSA meeting, February 25th, 2008.
This is the GPSA assembly meeting for February 25th in the Willard Strait Memorial Room, 5:30 p.m.
Hello, everyone. Can I have your attention, please? Perfect. Glad you're back. I would like to call the meeting to order. First item on the agenda. Please read the minutes and see whether there's any mistakes.
I move to approve the minutes.
Second.
Any objections? Minutes is approved. I would like to welcome our special guests, I think Mary Oppenheim and John Siciliano. They are here to make presentation on ACAA.
Go for it.
You can take a seat here.
Or wherever you would like to go and chat with us.
Where I would like to go.
Currently you are on the number 4 on the agenda. No, actually number 6. But if you want to go right now, that's fine with us.
Oh, there. Get it out of here. So we'll talk. Can everyone hear me? Okay, I'm John Plotano, I'm the Vice Provost at Cornell. We won't talk about whatever that means. This is Mary Oppenheim, she is the Vice President for Human Resources. The two of us are chairing the NCAA reaccreditation. That's the National Collegiate Athletic Association recertification. I'm sure this is the most interesting topic on your agenda tonight. We'll try to finish in an hour or two. What is NCAA reaccreditation? Well, you have to be accredited by this national body so that our teams can play in the same sandbox as the other teams in the Ivy League and elsewhere. They check every 10 years to make sure we're not doing anything bad. In the Ivy League, this tends not to be that significant a problem in that we don't have any athletic scholarships. We don't bring in anybody, particularly to play sports. We do recruit. But all those people come in under essentially the same process as others. But we're required to do this study, and as part of the study, we try to report out to the significant bodies on campus, and that includes the graduate and professional student body. We'll go very quickly through this. We're happy to answer questions, but we also know that you have other pressing matters. There are three areas of the study that we're required to look at. One is the governance and commitment to rules, compliance structure. The second is academic integrity and academic support issues. And the third is the question of equity and student athlete well-being. We'll cover those in separate groups very briefly and explain what they are. In terms of the timeline, President Scorton appointed the committee in last March. It's been working. The committee divided into subcommittees, several of them divided into further committees and cell divisions. Now it's all recombining into an extremely long bureaucratic report that's required. It's available on the web. Should you be inclined, go to Cornell and type in NCAA and you'll get there. We're in the process of reporting out preliminary findings now. Those will be taking any feedback and produce a final report. And then the folks from NCAA will come here and visit next fall and kick the tires and see how we're doing. So that's a basic introduction. Mary Oppenheim will now talk about the first part, which is governance and commitment to rules.
Before I start, let me just, so there's a whole lot of people that are are here involved in the NCAA recertification process in case you have questions. Andrew Noel, Athletic Director, Steve Irwin, Associate Athletic Director, Anita Brenner, Associate Athletic Director, Rotary Avery, who chairs the Academic Integrity Committee, Professor Avery from the
Welcome, everyone.
We have the names of everyone who's been on this committee on the website. We will forward it right on through those. So, as John said, there are three subcommittees. Their work and self-study for the basis of a report back to the NCAA. The first is the government's commitment to rules and compliance. They looked at two basic areas: institutional control, presidential authority, and shared responsibility. And then rules of compliance. So institutional control is responsibility for the conduct of the university's athletic program, and rules of compliance ensures that staff and athletes and others are compliant with the NCAA rules. This subcommittee's key findings related to the appropriate measures of authority, including presidential authority over athletics, and the subcommittee found Cornell to be in substantial compliance with all requirements. They did, however, find areas of concern. The athletic department compliance manual needed to be updated. That's now been done. And the schedule, the timing scheduling of a compliance review, which has now also been completed. Cornell must demonstrate that staff, athletes, and other representatives of athletic interests adhere to the NCAA rules. Again, the subcommittee found that Cornell was in substantial requirement with substantial compliance with all requirements, but did find one area of concern that some booster club bylaws lack a specific reference to compliance that has been corrected as of January.
Okay, the second component of the three is academic integrity subject. These are broken into academic standards and academic supporting. Academic standards relate to admission, academic standards, graduation rates. The purpose of the NCAA study here is to make sure that a student athlete, in terms of admission, academic standards, and graduation rates, are treated in a comparable way to other students, with some variation based on understanding that they are athletes as well. The recruited students, the findings are that recruited students are held to the admission standards set by the college. And the same admissions procedures as all students. They're also subject to the same requirements for good academic standing as all students. This is an important finding, obviously, that a lot of universities will find a very significant variation between what is expected of regular students and athletes. So Cornell doesn't have any of those issues. Graduation rates is another way, another indicator of this same concern. The graduation rate, the six-year graduation rate, which is the standard they use, shows that the retention very close. Athletes graduated at a slightly lower rate, 88% 6 years, than non-athletes, which is 92%. Male athletes are somewhat less, slightly lower graduation rate than female athletes. This reflects what's true in the general student body as well. Their imbalance by race is not possible because the cohorts are too small. In terms of academic support, the concern here is whether there's a proper emphasis on educational objectives in terms of student athletes. Again, you can imagine a concern at some of the other universities. The committee found that in a number of ways to keep appropriate balance between student and academic and athletic expectations. There are adequate, in fact, quite robust support systems for athletes in terms of academics.
The third subcommittee is the Equity and Student-Athlete Well-Being Subcommittee. This has by far the largest number of areas to review. There are areas to review some three categories: gender issues, minority issues, and student-athlete well-being. In gender issues, key findings were the fair and equitable treatment of both male and female students. Boulder House renovation was not completed as anticipated in 1999. So these will be key areas of improvement for the university going forward. Fair and equitable treatment of both male and female student-athletes and the athletic department personnel. In this case, the NCAA requires us to review compensation practices, and we should be using the same compensation practices for all of our coaches. And that is truly a market standing, and it is equitably determined for all coaches. Very equitable treatment. The proportion of women athletes has grown beyond the goal set in 1999, which is now at 46%. To bring the participation closer to the proportion of women in the student body. In 1999, the expectation of the student mix between male and female was thought to be lower than the regular population, and it turned out to be in the athletic department. Did see that coming and has increased the number of female athletes. Cornell must plan to grow in women's athletic opportunities to keep pace with this anticipated increase in the proportion of women students overall. Minority issues keep finding diversity among student athletes appears to be lagging behind the proportion of minority students overall. Particular issues among Asian American students and Black student athlete cohorts. However, student athletes identifying themselves as other in the race and ethnicity area has grown from 12% to 25% in the last 3 years. The subcommittee recommends continued partnership with admissions on minority student recruitment. Staff diversity in athletics has improved and reflects the university's advantage in women's training. 10% of mammalian staff are minorities, 2 minority head coaches, and 10% of assistant coaches are minorities. Subcommittee found diversity recruitment practices in athletics to be sufficient. Student athlete well-being and key findings. This is a commitment to student athlete personal and educational well-being. Subcommittee found the university to be meeting all requirements as outlined by the NCAA. The athletic academic support systems are well integrated with university programs. All student athletes have access to services, and student athletes are made aware of university services in the area of career counseling and personal health and safety, including alcohol and drug support. The subcommittee found the university to be meeting all requirements in the following areas. Student athletes athletic training and sports medicine services are actively provided to all student athletes according to NCAA guidelines and meet all NCAA standards. And student athletes have an opportunity to provide feedback about their athletic experience through end of the year evaluations and senior exit surveys and interviews as required by the NCAA. Athletics has appropriate grievance appeal procedures in place. Student athletes' rights and responsibilities are well defined in their handbook, and student athletes have opportunities to participate in athletic governance through the Student Athlete Advisory Council. So, just as a quick overview, essentially, we found the self-report found that we were in substantial compliance with all NCAA regulations. However, the subcommittee have identified 40 universities and areas for improvement, and that's what we'll be reporting to the NCAA in May. Do you take any questions in right now?
Michelle? Or a comment, actually. Michelle Leinfelder, Vice President of the GPSA, and former intercollegiate athlete, too. And so I'm really glad to hear that in most cases we met our compliance. But more of a comment, I find it quite appalling that facilities for the men's teams were near compliance, but most of the women's teams were not. And so I really hope that that's taken seriously. Not only is that important in recruitment, it's also just important. There's been a lot done in terms of female sports, in terms of Title IX, and making sure that there's equity in the number of women that can compete in intercollegiate sports. And so to see that kind of disparity in the facilities, it's sad to me. So I hope that that will be taken seriously.
Part of it is what the NCAA requires. The purpose of it is really to look really kind of harshly at your reopen and non-destructive that need improvement. So the facilities area is the area that we've identified as needing improvement.
Okay.
Not just the way compliance issues.
Okay.
And one of the things that the university needs to address is that most of our facilities development is done through fundraising.
Uh-huh.
And that is a very difficult way to keep your facilities equitable.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
The university itself, beyond the
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? Young?
This is a sort of follow up question. I wonder how much investment this needs to get the facilities to where you'd like to see them.
Now, we actually have the athletic department knows what its goals have been for all of its athletic facilities and has to indicate to most of the university about the time you finish your renovations to your facilities. You have to turn around and start again. So they have many millions of dollars to move our facilities on the athletic side. It's adequate and equal. And so we know those numbers. It's a big deal.
Many millions per year.
Right, per year, for a long time.
Nick?
That's the question. First, I want to just point clarification. I want to make sure I understand that this survey is how frequent? Is that 10 years to do this?
It is every
7 years. Okay, so then is there sort of an internal back and forth frequency, like that's more frequent? Yes. I'm just thinking, why have some of the other universities that have got the request frequently for unfortunate incidents? Is there any sort of like internal frequency that's more often than every 7 years?
The university does it for itself. So nothing that we're finding, frankly, is a surprise to the vice president for student athletic services or to the athletic director. We actually started looking again about 4 years after the first certification. But the issues that we're facing, so one thing that John said is that staying compliant for us is much easier because our athletes are first and foremost students. And so we don't waiver our admission preferences and we don't give athletic scholarships. So some of the time we don't have district clubs that have undue influence over the university. And that's where you see a lot of the big campus and other students in trouble. But the standards that we set for ourselves are way above what the NCAA has. And we've been trying to grapple with those issues for a while. So nothing that we're writing.
We also have part of the athletic staff is dedicated to this on an ongoing basis. There's close work with the admissions staff all the time. It's an annual process in terms of the admissions student athletes that gets contributed to. There's a committee of faculty that comes out of the faculty senate that's specifically focused on it. So even though we have a 10-year checkup at the NCAA, we take this seriously for our own purposes, independent of whether there was an NCAA or a schema.
And we have an NCAA compliance officer within athletics. And under Andy Noel, the view has been that it, even if it is a minor infraction, that we report it. And that way we make ourselves better. So we really haven't had any significant violations, but we report athletes and we just think that we're one for the staff. We take a very cautious approach.
Kristen?
Yes.
Other questions? Mike?
Okay. I'm Eric. I'll see you again. I guess my one question would actually refer back to academic integrity. our last meeting, we had a discussion at GPSA about just academic integrity as general, part of the campus, part of the academic life, dealing with issues like plagiarism and cheating during an exam. And, you know, about every year you do see an issue of cheating happen at, you know, some big football, big basketball school. I was wondering if you could also just comment on how the committee has viewed Cornell in that regard.
So the individual academic infractions are not dealt with at that level in the NCAA. However, what is reviewed is an assurance of consistency with the university practice. So what would be a problem is that if a student athlete plagiarized was held to a different standard than a non-athlete, that would be an issue. So that's where the student well-being aspect of this review comes into play. They look for disparities between the treatment of athletes with the treatment of everyone else. So that's what the subcommittees are honed in to look for. Are you treated either in a favorable or a non-favorable way? Are you treating your student athletes differently, particularly as it relates to their academic experience? They leave here, do they have an equal chance to be here with the quality of research and what non athletic work? And that would be both in the academic integrity and in the academic.
Any more questions? Okay, I guess this is a very successful presentation. If you have more questions, or if people have more questions, maybe they can write to you. Is there an address we can?
Yeah, there is actually.
If you're looking for Mary's email address, I know Mary's email address, and can get it.
MGL5.
We want to thank you very much for the time. It's very useful to hear from students, particularly ones that have passed on to graduate professional education. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, all the guests. Okay, let's come back to the agenda item. Now, let's move on to open forum. Anyone have any issues to bring up to open forum? See none? Let's pass on to the next one. Executive updates. Who wants to start?
I can go.
Amy?
Okay. I will stand up here a little bit. So, I turned it off. It's off. Okay. I will just not use the mic. Okay, turn that one off. Okay. I will just not use the mic. This bears all any more of that. Okay, so just a few things. You see a couple of resolutions here for me. We're Andy Cohen, myself, and David Proctor, a member of the core, are starting to look at the charter for things that are missing, things in terms of procedure. We're going to make some recommendations for next year to look at in terms of the Appendix B that we just, not Appendix B, Appendix A, the byline funding procedure, because we've just been through it, and we know what worked and what didn't work, and are working helpfully to try and clarify things. So if you have any suggestions for that or things you'd like us to look at, please let me know. Then one other thing, at the last core meeting, I promised you posters for this child care committee. If you guys can post these up in your departments, especially those of you in the far reaches of campus and AKA and the professional school, that'd be really helpful because those are the ones we're having a hard time connecting people to a little bit more. So, other than that, I think we're still looking for committee representatives. If you're interested in transportation, flip day, or being on the Willard Strait Hall board for how this building is used, let me know. So, I'm going to send about half these this way and half the other.
In the meantime, Michelle, do you want to do your update?
Yep. Okay. Mine is really short, I think, unless there's discussion.
Kill it.
I'll just speak up. There have been some developments on the whole slope day thing, and I don't want to go into it too much just because I know it's probably a tired subject. It has been. But Mike and Amy and I had a few meetings with Dean Hubble, and there was some stuff in the Cornell Daily Sun, and so I want to make sure that that's clarified, at least with this group, and you can pass it on to whoever. But graduate students will not be ticketed this year, and so long as what has been said holds true, we will not be ticketed in the future. What will happen this year is they will have equipment to swipe our cards so that they can get a number for how many graduate and professional students attend. With that number, with that data, in the future, it will be easier for us to consider what we owe in terms of paying equitably for the graduate and professional student population. Okay, so if anybody has any questions, you can throw those either my way or at Mike. Andy?
I just have a real quick question. Do we know what it is that some Wilson County graduate student
Yes, the procedure for their system, and sorry, I was there when Liz was talking about it, is that they're going to card everybody going in and out of the gate and keep track of how long people were on the slope, how often, how many times people came through. So it's actually going to be very useful for slope day as well. So, but... What's that? Exactly. So I think it'll be a lot of good information to help both groups kind of decide things.
Nick, did you have a question on that?
Okay, update is really simple. I've been preparing for the report to the trustee board on March 7th. The preliminary draft has been submitted, and we're looking forward to reflect our thoughts. And one major thing will be our graduate student center, which is also written up in a resolution today, so we can discuss further. I do not intend to circulate the draft because it gets complicated, but if you have real interest, you can email me and I can send the draft to you, and you can give me feedback. Although it has been circulated to trustees, I think the final version is oral, so we can still change it. Another one is I sent out the proposal for inter-campus collaboration with Well Medical School, and I got some feedback from our members. It seems I didn't explain the background clear enough, so people have questions about funding and whether this proposal is asking money from us or from department, from where. So actually, it is a proposal coming from the Well Medical School. Initially, they thought, or the students who initiated it thought it will be easy because they have quite a few $1 million endowment for intercampus collaboration. But it turned out those are mostly for faculty-initiated collaborations. So when the student checked with the administration, they said, this is a good idea, we don't practice right now, why don't you write up a formal proposal with the budget so that we can maybe get the money and start practicing it from next year on. That's where it come from, so I think most likely the funding will come from Well Medical School instead of us. Definitely not GPSA and maybe not Ithaca campus either. But there are many elements touch upon us. For example, it proposed one item, suggests the GPSA or Ithaca student leadership will have some exchange or joint retreat with the Well Medical students government, so that can either be on this campus or their campus. and this proposal have budget to cover the expenditure. And there are some other student level collaborations. We will talk more detail at next meeting. But I will send out an up-to-date proposal to everyone, so if you have questions, you can email me back. Let's move on. Unless, does anyone have any questions? Let's move on to next item on agenda, committee reports. So, Andy Cohen. I believe there is also a Cornell Daily Sun article on this, and maybe more detail you can just ask Andy.
Yeah, if you look through this on the archives from last week, like every day or something, Friday, an op-ed written by John Fletcher,
further forward it to Andy afterwards. Sean, do you want to say anything? Andy, can you repeat his question?
Longer than that, so that's the only effect.
Okay, thanks, Andy. Event committee, you want to say something?
Yeah.
Can you raise up your voice a bit? Can you?
Is that mic working? Why don't you just come up to the front and... Yay for mic issues! Okay. Can you turn that one back off? Thank you.
Raffle tickets will be on sale March 10th through the 14th, and again on the 24th to the 28th. Look for them at Trillium, TJIS, and also at Willard Street Ticket Office. Anybody have that? Oh, I'm sorry. March 10th to March 14th. And March 24th to March 28th. Did you have a question? I can't.
Have you talked to Amy about selling in 109 Great Hall?
No.
Talked to Amy.
Okay.
So, my understanding is you will write out an email to send to GPSA members, right? So, the entire mailing list, so that people can forward this to their student group?
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Nick,
you have another question?
I mean, I think the safest way is if we had people buy the tickets.
Yeah.
Because I know we had money trickling in yet this fall that people were randomly finding in different places.
Yeah.
And so...
that's one... I mean, we haven't really talked further on that, but that's one recommendation that I made, is that if you want to buy a block of tickets and sell them, then my recommendation, and it's only my recommendation, but it is that you present the full sum of money to Girsha in order to get those tickets, because otherwise, I mean, is that okay, Amy, as far as you know? Because otherwise, we had money still coming. We didn't have accounts settled until summer, early fall this last year, and that's not right.
Yeah.
I actually still have some of that people money because I asked for the room where I was presenting that.
109 Day Hall.
Yeah.
I assume that the Grand Hall sold out, so do we plan to have a maximum number of tickets anyone could buy? Because if you can buy any block, then sort of seems...
Probably a good idea. That's probably something to think about. Anyone for
I haven't thought about it yet, honestly.
So what is the accommodation limit this year? 500?
500. Yeah. So get your tickets early because they're going to sell out really fast. I'm just wondering if there's any university applications or something like how? I don't know. I've never heard of it. I've
yeah,
heard
I
about
have.
It,
so. I've heard of it, but I've never used it, so I don't. Yeah, agreed. It could be. I mean, I don't know how fast that could get done. If that would need to be something for next year, or I don't know.
Do you think it's that hard for a lot of students to just walk over here and buy a ticket? I mean,
I think it
I'm not trying to be like, you know.
Yeah. Probably mostly time limitation because
okay.
Online transaction you can do 24 hours.
Okay.
That's a big advantage.
I
mean, it sounds selfish, but
so we will go back and check those options?
Yes, definitely. So I'll look into the PayPal option and...
Probably PayPal is the best way to go. It's probably whatever you're going to already. If you purchase it, same way you buy it.
Have you ever used it for anything?
I haven't.
Okay.
I mean, why don't you guys talk?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe afterwards.
Yeah, maybe, Amy, that's something that you could look into
yeah.
for Geersha. And
yeah.
Okay.
I'd be hesitant just to implement that this year, though. Yeah.
I would be, too, only because we haven't really been advertising it as such.
Yeah.
But
people still know that, you know, they got their tickets last year through the phone. That's what I got on people. So.
But I encourage you to look into this, because if there's convenient ways, people will find it right away. We can just include the link in our email list,
yeah.
and people can click through it. That will be very convenient.
Well, also another thing is, you know...
We shouldn't give up the physical selling, I agree.
You're losing a dollar ticket.
Yeah, you also lose money for buying, for allowing purchases through PayPal and things like that. Yeah, but they have a program and things set up with the university to be able to do that, to purchase with your NetID. Like, they've gotten special permission and all that kind of fun jazz. You have to go through a bazillion lines of paperwork to do that. I've only been briefly familiar of somebody trying to do the paperwork to do that. But they're usually pretty guarded on that information. So,
why don't we talk about this afterwards?
Right, okay.
I think there are a lot of good suggestions.
Okay, great. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. So next item on the agenda is the election of pay and benefit chair. Amy, do you want to talk briefly about this position?
I can talk briefly. The pay and benefits chair is supposed to look at things regarding things regarding health insurance, stipends, other benefits that campus students are supposed to receive. It was very successful several years ago when they did the pay and benefits
survey.
Thank you. It's Monday. Pay and benefits survey. However, we've had some changes continue to go through the Pay and Benefits Committee. But this committee has a lot of potential. I mean, this year we saw things like health insurance. People brought up different things like dental and eye care plans that aren't optional on our insurance plans that we have to pay additional for, things along that line. Financial aid that came through this year for the research students in the endowed colleges, and things along that line.
Thank you, Amy. So now, you have
kind
a question.
Kind of work does it involve, like, what do you have to register for by email?
So I think...
It can be whatever you want it to be.
Yeah. This is kind of...
I came through in 2005 because the chairperson took the initiative to create a survey and had a committee that was willing to work on it. And so... A lot of the officer positions within the GPSA, you have to take your own initiative. Some things are delineated and other things are not. I mean, grad ball is a perfect example. We don't necessarily have to have the grad ball, but the first events committee had a couple enthusiastic people and put it together, and it's become a great event. So This is the same sort of thing, just a different topic.
We also had a pay and benefit chair last year to push the university to set up this off-campus housing office. I think that's one example too. Without further ado, I will open the floor for nominations. Self-nomination is encouraged. Anyone want to run? Okay.
One thing that might be useful is even if you started this and got those people involved as a committee, I mean, half the battle is getting a committee going and involved and excited about the issues that you'd like to see dealt with. And so that might be a valuable way to do that.
Right, we understand this very short time, but you already have been on this committee
right.
for quite a long time, so. Thank you, Christian. So we have you as the
nomination.
First candidate.
Right.
Do you need a
second? He's seconded.
Okay. Any other nominations? Okay. Any other nominations? See none, we close nominations.
I move the unanimous ballot.
Hands on election, point
of order. Oh, Mike.
So let's...
we need to
vote.
Just wait.
Okay, all those in favor of Christian to be the chair of Parent Benefit Committee, raise your placard.
Oh,
okay.
6, 7, 8, 10, 11, 12.
All those opposed?
Oh.
Any abstention?
Where's your placard?
2 abstentions. Right, Christian and you abstention? Okay.
Okay.
Do we have everybody here?
Yeah, we're fine. Please select it.
Okay, congratulations, Christian. We can talk after the meeting. Let's move on to the next item on agenda, Resolution 6, Academic Integrity, proposed by Tamara Kadu. You can speak.
First,
Any questions to her? Okay, question. Any other discussions? Seeing none, I would like to entertain a motion to move it to unanimous ballot. Mm-hmm.
You have to move to approve. To approve?
Call a question.
Call a question. Yeah,
that works too. Call a question.
Motion, call a question. Thank you.
So we're and ask for any objections.
Any objections? See none?
We'll move to vote.
Motion for you.
Second.
What? Unanimous consent.
Any
objections?
Any objections to unanimous consent? See none? So this resolution passes.
Yay.
Thank you, Tamara. We move on to the next resolution, resolution number 7, Graduate Student Center. It's proposed by Yong. Please explain it.
Sure. So I wrote this resolution, which turned out really long, but I hope you had time to look over it. The basic motivation comes from the fact that I feel that the government is so again, and I thought that there should be some message that we send out as a body that we want it to be reopened and that we want to really work towards the Graduate Student Center as outlined in the CPI. And I think the best way to do that is to pass a resolution. So then I talked to some people in the administration, among them Mr. Porta, and what I found out, so just to give you a little bit of history, is that the barn was originally opened in 1992 due to a petition from the graduate students. Before, all they had was some small rooms in Page Hall. So what I learned from this is if you want something to happen, most likely you have to do this. Because even though they're trying to make a master plan and have a long-term vision, if the graduate professional student community wants something, they will probably have to stand up for it. So this is what I'm trying to achieve with this resolution. Let me go through the points which I find the most important, so I don't intend to read the thing. Does anybody want me to read it out loud?
I don't think so.
So I think in the beginning that history was founded in 1992, then I say that graduate students are important to the university, that this is the center is important at the point where everyone can meet from different departments. Such centers exist at other IB institutions, and I think that's an important point to make because it's important for the recruitment of graduate students. Then I try to tie this in with the GPI and with other with the status reports that just came out and which is on the web, so you can look at that as a graphical website. It's hard to find it, I think you're only going to. So what I'm trying to say is there is a master plan, and I'm emphasizing the master plan because I remember that when Adam Powell was here in a meeting of the coolest public event, she said, yes, there is a good amount of urgency in the administration, and there is a master plan, and we have to make sure that whatever we do fits in with the master plan. Now, whatever I've seen so far from the master plan talks about what happens in 60 years. And I think that's not the time scale on which I think one should be thinking about the barn. Especially not if the statement is that it will be reopened only for 3 to 5 years. So I think it's important to, I'm trying to make a point that that's all important and it should fit in somehow, but it's still something where we cannot wait for it. So there needs to be a committee that deals with this, and such a committee, or such a working group is actually asked for in this interim report by the subcommittee that was in the center. And so I think this is the last part. Whereas renovation work is the fourth paragraph in the bottom. Whereas renovation work is expected to allow a temporary reopening of the barn for the next 3 to 5 years only, and whereas the long-term vision for the campus, including a graduate center some decades away, does neither solve the problems driving the professional student community faces today, nor will it solve the ones resurfacing in 5 years if the rigor barn does get again. Be it therefore resolved that the GPSA urges the administration, in the face of the current emergency, to recognize the importance of the new operational graduate student center to continue on the successful path set out by the Bigger Barn in 1992. That's somewhat complicated sentence, but I hope it's okay. Then it continues, be it further resolved that the administration makes this recognition visible by creating a working group which, as outlined in the GCI interim report, is inclusive of representative decision-making capabilities and continues to meet on a monthly basis to bring together representative information from across campuses. And now there's an addition, and which shall further be charged with the identification of possible sites and solutions for such a center to be opened within the next 5 years. And so then we further resolve that the PSA recommends reaching out to graduate alumni and then assess to who should.
Before we go to discussion, I would like to thank you all for taking this up. I believe we have been discussing this topic since last semester, but a lot of good ideas get lost during the discussion, so he actually bringing it up, saying we should pass a resolution or write a resolution on this topic. And I also have some background information on what he said. First of all, I believe the master plan put this on somewhat 20 years timeline for the grad center, and that's recommended because the master plan group doesn't have the power to build anything, they just give recommendations. And the location is, I think, near East Hill Plaza, so that is very far away from the center campus. And the GCI working group kind of classified this as a long-term problem, and no subcommittee is taking this up. They basically look at the administration, the vice president and dean of graduate school, saying this is up to them because this requires a huge amount of money and a lot of discussion about how the current bigger barn should either be renovated or tear down or devote to some other usage. So actually nobody is touching upon the long-term discussion, long-term construction of a graduate student center. What has been discussed is how to utilize the current facilities on campus, either the Trillium or some other underutilized conference room somewhere, to also host graduate student events so that we have something beyond the barn. But nothing has been discussed about what will happen to barn after 5 years. So I think this is a very good timely resolution, and we have to have something concrete that we can hold upon. Although working group is maybe not the most ideal form, but at least we are following up on this so that we know what's happening for this project. I think we can open this up for a discussion, Nick.
I think it's great that you're saying what you want to do. I am concerned with 5 year opening time frames. I think that any new possibility we're going to use is an existing building that's going to be located wherever that time.
So I thought about doing or Michelle recommended maybe I should change it to as soon as possible. And I thought about I actually left this in because I thought, well, if they admit to closing the barn, there should be some substitute. And on the other hand, I think, and this is my own naive estimate, you know, they build big buildings for hundreds of millions of dollars, and I cannot imagine that the grant to Nintendo would cost more than a couple of million. I don't know. And I understand that's a lot of money, and I understand that, of course, you know, just if you look at the total revenue, you shouldn't think that that's all available and it can be reallocated easily. But I still think that I think 5 years is as soon as possible. And I thought that if you write as soon as possible, people will likely answer, well, it's not possible. And so I thought having a year maybe.
Mom?
The chat for boarding a phase says, in the first page, it is stated whereas in the current tactical campaign, graduate students like not considered. Because the tactical campaign is a vertical and I think the administration and the board can always find something where it is considered. I think we should change the wording to the adequate to consider for the level word, but not that I think too strong.
So I looked at the website, yeah. And I tried for half an hour to find where regular students will be considered. Because you can go there and you can say, okay, I want my money to go to this particular thing. And the only thing you can do for graduate students is you can give money to scholarships. Yeah. That's very important. But there was nothing on the facilities, right? So they have renovation of the human hall. But there's no, I mean, fine, maybe that's important. But there's no mentioning of any facility that would be for graduate students. There was nothing else that I would identify with credit. So I understand, and I had the same concern, and maybe just for half an hour, to change the strategy.
Or perhaps piggybacking on that, just saying something like, in the current capital campaign, facilities for graduate students are not considered.
Okay.
So, do you want to take notes so that you can propose an amendment to your own resolution later? Because
what was that?
Facilities for graduate students.
So, I'll make a motion to amend that statement to say, whereas in the current capital campaign, facilities for graduate student life are not considered.
Can you ask for discussion on the motion?
Discussion on the motion? This is on this amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Sean?
For example, like the physics department students have a new building, and maybe there are some rooms that they reserve for graduate students.
Yeah.
So in this case, would that be considered as the facilities for graduate students?
In the new physical sciences building, it's all teaching space or research space. It's not common use graduate student space. If you look at the plans for the new building that's going up there, it's actually collaborative space between physics, chemistry, and such there. So there's no space.
What I just said is an example, because some other colleges are also building new facilities. So I just want to ask
Well, I think that
like architecture school and like engineering school, they are all using like new facilities. So whether like this facility must be specified for graduate students.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is very important.
And do you want to answer his question or new question?
I think it's realistic that as far as any of us are aware,
Yeah, points were taken. Are you trying to say something?
Yeah. So this also concerns me. I would rather not see us, this piggybacks off of that comment a little bit, with a graduate student room here, a graduate student room there, a graduate student room over there, because what it's going to do is it's going to fracture the graduate student community even more than it is. And the purpose of a graduate student center is to bring it together where I can associate being from chemistry with people from English, you know, people that I wouldn't normally interact with on a daily basis. And asking for something where we've got a room here and a room there, which is what the administration seems to think is a quick fix for this, I don't think is a viable long-term solution. So.
Yeah, I think Sean was not trying to ask for that. He was just trying to defend our statement. But I think Andy's point was well taken. So do we want to, I would like to entertain a motion to move to unanimous ballot on this amendment.
Well, you just vote on the amendment.
Oh, we just vote on the, okay. All those in favor of this amendment. Oh, Tamara, you want to say something? Okay.
Oh, goody!
Okay, you can state your amendment of amendment.
Whereas in the current capital campaign, facilities for graduate student life are not considered, is what I had written down. As a
she said okay. Unified.
So in the
so it is whereas in the current capital campaign, a facility for a unified graduate student life is not considered. Oh, a graduate student center. Do we need that life?
For a graduate student center, we do more life to do that. I want to use language here that brings us back to what the vision of the DGI is, create a unified graduate student center.
Okay, read exactly what you want it to say, just so we're all on the same page.
I think,
yeah.
But now is the discussion of the amendment of the amendment. I think this is a narrowed down version of what he wanted to say at the beginning. He was trying to say in the capital campaign there's nothing covering graduate student life. Therefore, we ask for something more specific. And here you are saying in capital campaign there's nothing about graduate student center. That leave out a lot of other things, but it's up to people to decide whether we want to narrow it down.
I don't know. I think keeping it as broad as correct would be beneficial just because it makes more of an impact. Admittedly, the grad student center is the most important part of the grad, you know, of that statement for graduate student life, but it seems to be most important. But saying, no, we're not getting anything. You know, if we can correctly say that, I think that's a more powerful statement than you're not giving us the grad center.
Any other comments on this? Do you want to respond to this?
Sure. I mean, I think those are, I would make the same distinction that you made, and so my kids went online and continued to go to where you would actually put in your credit card number, and there apparently you can dedicate the amount of money that you want to give also to a graduate student center. But I didn't go that far. So I went to the title page and said, okay, where can I give money to facilities, no mentioning of a graduate student center. Student, only mentioning of graduate student scholarship. So
I don't think it's a priority.
Can I withdraw my amendment? Can we withdraw our amendment?
You can withdraw your amendment.
I withdraw my correction and take a little bit of that
We have to. Val's not officially a voting member, so one of the voting members has to make the amendment.
So both amendments are withdrawn right now,
yes.
And you are making. Any discussion on this? Okay, all those in favor of this new amendment, raise your hand. Thanks. Did it?
8, 10, 11, 12.
All those opposed?
Yes, it's an abstention.
Sorry. Abstentions? Okay, this amendment passes. And we go back to the discussion on this original resolution.
Correct.
Okay. That's another amendment?
Yep.
Discussion on this?
It can be a friendly amendment. It can be a friendly amendment.
I can accept it.
Okay. Friendly amendment, do we need to vote on it? Okay, so this is a friendly amendment. Can I entertain a motion to extend this meeting by, let's say, 15 minutes? Cause
second.
Okay, anyone object? Okay, meeting extend to 7:15. Let's speed up. So I think we don't need to really pick every word, but we need to worry about what we really ask from the administration. So, Mike?
Just motion to amend the following resolve clause with Chris Florida, director of the
So you also take it? Okay.
I'm not friendly.
I also have some. Okay. You can say
so. What Nick had mentioned earlier, we moved on to another topic related to it. But just a little bit for me, concerned about the section that dictates that maybe over the next 5 years, because I wouldn't want that one element to do something, lots of something being done here. And it seems to me that it would be
Yeah, I agree with this. I think pushing it too fast may make them reject the whole thing. So next one, Nick, I think you raised up. I think one possibility is they just fix up the barn to make it stand for like 5 more years. That seems to be easier. Mal?
Yeah, just providing some background information. I mean, the three and four is the vision for the company.
Okay.
And I know how we will approach it. So the first thing is they will first approve this concept.
Okay.
And after they approve this concept, probably after another year, they will choose the designer if you want a new building. And they will design that, and then they will approve the budget, and finally, they will build the building. So probably, if you want this building in 5 years, they need to make don't know whether you think it's good or not. It's up to you. But my point is, if you want that open 5 years, they should make probably make a decision in this year, probably at the end of it, just on that kind of information.
Sure. Maybe I can. I think so. What I thought, I understand that for opening a new building in general, there is a well established process.
Yeah.
But I think if the roof falls on your head, you may be able to go away from that process. And if you think that that's very unrealistic to happen, then I am happy to.
So the basic thing, based on my experience, if they approve this contract, this has already happened. Probably, I don't know the exact wording of that. So probably you should get a deadline for them to agree with this contract. I mean, we need to do that. And because this 5 years, we will also consider the construction time. And we also, if they want a new building, they need to find a designer to design a building. It will take some time. And like new people, or they revise their design. Probably that will push them too hard. I mean, but anyway, from my experience, if they are going with the concept, then this will happen. So the best way is to set up. If you want to really want to set a deadline, that's the deadline for them to start. I mean, instead of opening that. Otherwise, as you said, probably they will find a very old place, because that will save them some time.
So if one was to change this to agreement of a concept or something?
Whatever word is the best.
Andy, did you want to say something? Yeah, you can say it.
All right, I have a question that I hope will address something, but I think it's important to be realistic. I also think it's important to say in this resolution what we want and what we want, and not to say, let's not say anything about time, or let's weaken what we say about time, because we're afraid that if we ask too strongly, they might just say, we don't like it anymore. So here's what I propose. I think what I'm effectively doing is saying, okay, we don't need our new full service shiny building to have a formal building inspection 5 years today, but we need something in place when the roof falls down again. Right? So here's what I propose. It's right to be open within the next 5 years and replace it with, and with providing continuity of services beyond 5 years. So
repeat that? Do you accept that?
Can I accept that amendment? I think.
We can
discuss.
I second the motion for an amendment. Now we have a discussion.
Okay, we are discussing this amendment. Do you want to say something?
So what I'm hearing you saying is to change it to after the comma in this say, provide continuity of services beyond 5 years and develop a realistic
timeline based on the findings of the committee for an appropriate construction date.
How about realistic timeline and implementation of a graduate student life center or graduate student center?
Creation of a realistic timeline for the construction of a graduate.
take construction, you can also save it.
Right. Construction.
So develop a timeline, a realistic timeline for the opening of the new project.
Okay, so do you want to finalize the wording and take it as a friendly
okay.
amendment?
So I amend the amendment.
Or you can take it as
a friendly amendment too.
Yeah.
Okay. It's all
okay.
Thing.
Either way. Okay. So after the comma, for such a center, it shall read, and provide continuity of services beyond 5 years, and develop a realistic timeline for a graduate student center to be open.
So this is your friendly amendment accepted. It's not the same as Andy's version, so is Andy okay with that? Is it okay? Okay, so shall we vote on the entire resolution right now? All those in favor, you want to say something?
Here, the board will not allow the original graduate alumni that would have followed such a letter. That's for my own, for my experience. But I'm graduate alumni, I'm more likely to support graduate. They are undergraduate alumni, but they are much more rich undergraduate alumni. So the overall, we all study probability. So the money is more, probably more likely to come from undergraduate alumni. Because they are more rich undergraduate alumni. Probably we think we can delete the graduate, just to let the...
No.
Yeah, so there is an intention to that line, which was that usually, or apparently what I heard, and I don't know whether my sources are reliable, but you know more. There is a lot going on to get money from undergraduate alumni, but there's almost nothing going on to get money from graduate alumni. So obviously undergraduate alumni are led by people from the graduate center, right? That's also a success. So I think it's important to not see this as a contrast to undergraduate, but to see this as complementary.
Yeah.
Because if they don't do much there right now, then I think we can point out that if they say there's no money, we should also ask for money. So that's the intention of the sentence.
Okay. Now, all those in favor of this resolution, please raise your placard. Okay. All those opposed. Abstentions.
And it passes.
The resolution passes. Thank you.
Yeah. Unanimously.
Yeah. So this will be sent to all those university officials as he recommended at the end. Now let's move on to next business on agenda is update of charter from Amy Richard.
Okay. So as I said earlier, we're working on some updates to the charter. This is the initial start for this. The premise of this resolution is to our secretary position in this assembly doesn't necessarily take care of typical secretary positions that most assemblies would have their secretary take care of. And I was just trying to come up with ways to, number one, get more people interested in the position for future years so that people are excited about the position. Number two, help in their relations with the university committee. I'm also going to friendly amend this to from of operations to for operations. It's a little logistic thing, but it's fairly straightforward. If you have any questions, this will not be voted on at this meeting, but will come up for a vote in the March meeting. So if you have any questions, please feel free to contact me in between, and maybe we can come up with a better solution. So.
Any comments on this? Discussions? Then you can follow up with Amy, and she will bring us more updates at next meeting. Thanks. Next item on agenda, update of charter from Mike Walsh.
Okay, so when I found out that we're electing yet again, not as a candidate, but committee chair, our fifth in 3 years, I got rather irritated and annoyed because, you know, when I first joined the GPSA about 2.5 years ago, I think at this point, the pay and benefits committee was, I guess, the shining star. The year we had just finished up the pay and benefits survey, that a lot of great data came out of health insurance, stipend levels, and whatnot. And 2 years before that, the Pay and Benefits Committee also went around and got about 1,400 graduate professional student signatures because we did not yet have a dental or vision plan. And I was surprised to see that 14,000 number. I did not know that 1,400 number. I did not know that 1,400 graduate students were that easily accessible on campus. So this committee has done a lot of good work, good hard work in the past. And it's kind of frustrating me to see it kind of flounder over the past 3 years as I'm doing. Well, with that being said, I'd like to say that Zooming Wayne did a good job last year getting the off-campus housing office off the ground, but that was basically herself and not the committee as a whole doing that job. With that being said, I went ahead, you know, very quickly, just tossed like a lot of ideas on the whiteboard, so to say. Wrote them down, and what I came up with was kind of renaming the committee into something different. I chose the wording Student Advocacy Committee because I felt the title, the Pay and Benefit title was a little bit too stringent. I think Pay and Benefits, usually you think of the, you know, the graduate student on a stipend, health insurance, and child care was basically, you know, the three issues that were originally brought up. But, you know, as I got to know a lot of grad students here on campus through the GPSA, the diverse group that we have here. We all know that, you know, that graduate student body is very spread out, very different, very diverse. We have a lot of professional students here on financial aid. We have housing issues that we need, that we've been trying to deal with over the past 2 years, specifically with Hasbro, but never really had a strong mechanism to deal with. So I'm really happy to see that Christian stepped up today. I was kind of, you know, the reason why I wrote this was I was expecting that no one was, just because we didn't have it, no one stepped up to this last spring, and we had to wait until this fall to elect our new chair. And yeah, it's a couple ideas I just want to put out there. I'm sure I'm going to be talking to Christian, or Christian's going to be asking me a lot of questions. If you want to take this over, go ahead. I just think we need to start moving forward on, you know, defining this committee more solidly so we can better represent the entire graduate and professional student body.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Any discussion on this topic? Thoughts people have? Tamara?
Not right now, but we can. We can rewrite it. Yeah, we're not voting on this now.
Okay.
Yeah, so we can rewrite it.
Second,
right, this is just about general idea. Andy?
Oh, yeah, it's a good idea.
Yeah, I'm going to say I really like this as well because this is a committee not wholly irrelevant to those of us who are not paying for any benefits. You might actually see a lot of student interest.
Yeah.
That's the
idea.
You know, and you know, there are a couple things here I think we need to tighten up a little bit more to get within our purview. Ari told me today that we actually don't have the power to lobby, if not in our charter. But for some reason it's in the Student Assembly Charter, which is where I got that idea from.
Maybe that needs to change.
And I think there are, you know, some things we want to kind of tighten up too with the Graduate Community Initiative. What role do we want the committee to play in that? And what role, you know, in many ways, you know, I kind of think of the GPSA as the, you know, Graduate and Professional Student Advocacy Committee as well. But I think we need something in there as well to streamline a lot of our discussions. So as I've noticed over my past 2.5 years, you know, sometimes we do things here on the GPSA side of things, you know, as the body of 19, kind of rash. You know, we've made some decisions in the past that were not as well informed as could have been, and I think having a mechanism such as this committee in place would help us make stronger and better decisions.
Yeah, thanks. I think in sake of time, we'd better leave the further discussions over email. Is that okay? We'll vote on those next time.
Yeah, oh yeah, sure.
Do we need to extend it further by 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Take a look and let's see how far we get in Appendix D.
Okay, let's move on to the next item on agenda. It's update of Charter Appendix B, presented by Sean.
Events that are provided through the Big Red Barn that are free are ones that are programmed directly out of our student activity fee. The ones that you are charged for are ones that other organizations organize. Say, I think there's a salsa dancing group or whatnot, or swing dancing that will charge for some of the lessons they provide, but they're not receiving funding out of our student activity fee allocation. So I don't think that's a stipulation we need to put in there under the Big Red Barn. Secondly, under the sporting event, are they amenable to families being able to purchase tickets to get into hockey games? Because It seems like it would take away tickets from students here. I mean, from students, and I'm not sure because there's a very limited number of hockey tickets.
Oh, this doesn't include the hockey tickets.
Okay, that's how it's written. So, you'll probably want to strike under number one, in which graduate professional students, and then strike, and families are eligible to purchase tickets at a reduced price. At a reduced price upon presentation of proper Cornell identification. So it's up in the top in the first sentence, and then in the second part it should be stricken. And then under your concert commission, for some reason, it struck point two and was putting one, two, three, so you have two number one points. I don't know if that was in the copy that we got. There's a 1, a 1, a 2, 3, and a 4. So I don't know if that was...
It should be 1, 2,
3, 4, 5.
Okay.
Just checking.
I think we are running out of time, so I actually suggest we extend a minute meeting for 5 minutes more.
So move.
Second.
Okay. If you can't stay, then you can stand up and leave. So continue discussion. Young?
I think
Mike?
Yeah.
Okay, Mike first.
Okay, the athletic thing, I think that's great. Let's just, you know, I think that try to clarify that, try and get in touch with Andy Noel about the hockey tickets. I don't want a 4-year-old who doesn't appreciate hockey as much as I do beat me out. And then the slope day, I'm concerned about a couple of things here. I guess the first and foremost thing is I think we need something in here saying that slope day will provide access to the slope for graduate and professional students.
For free?
Yeah. I think that's what a couple of people were calling for earlier. Something very direct, you know, something to say if, you know, the student assembly tried to kick us out again next year, we say we have it in our charter. If they kick us out, you know, for some reason if they concede, which they probably won't, but still, then slope day will lose money from graduate professionals.
I know that they were not charged for graduate students this year, or more than next year.
Well, probably won't, but you know, if they do, I want something in here, in this. If they do try and charge us, that would allow us to say, hey, you're violating our appendix B, we're going to defund you.
Because at this point, it's more of a gentleman's agreement saying
yeah.
that they're not going to pursue ticketing of graduate students this year until there's more data available. And it'd be nice to have something in there for future generations to fall back on to say, hey, this is in our appendix B. What's that? Exactly.
In fact, they are suggesting they, after they get the statistics, they come back to collect money from us for this year.
That
so.
Won't happen.
That will not happen, but I think SA is using the same method to write this into their appendix B, or at least they intend to, so we should use ours too.
Yeah, I don't want to get into war, just want, you know, our language speaks strong, so we don't lose any money here. But I'd just like to...
Then how to do this case, for example, we have to sponsor them for this year and they did not track them. And we track them the next year, then we stop funding and then all the funding give back to the GLAFC or anywhere else.
If we defund them, yes, the money goes back to the GPSAFC. But all we have to do is just write in here that Slope Day will provide free access to graduate and professional students to the slope.
Yeah, that's just if they violate this,
if they violate this, and I think I'm not sure what our charter says, but we have to, you know, take a vote, say
mm-hmm.
that they violated this, and then that money gets reallocated to the GPSAFC. Okay. I think just to finish up two things here. I think Andy's point was valid, but I'm a little bit hesitant to say even encourage. You know, the SA was trying to
strong arm the slow-based steering committee itself, and I'm just a little bit hesitating. This is presidential. This committee, the steering committee, is presidential directive. It's their strategy and seats are allocated on it. I don't think we're going to lose our seats there.
It's actually in our charter. There was a resolution last spring. Now that we know that there's updates, that we appoint somebody to these committees.
So it's basically our charter that we have to sit in the slow day for, I mean, slow day 30
minutes.
That's not conditional on our funding for them?
No, because the slow day steering committee is not a conditional. We don't fund them.
Okay.
So that was the point anyway. And the last thing is this grad zone. You know, it sounds like a fun zone at McDonald's. I don't, you know, I give a lot of props to Liz. She does a lot of hard work. She's really trying hard to get graduate professional students out. And this was one of her ideas. I think, you know, on some level it could be a good idea. I just don't know if it will succeed. And I'm a little bit worried that if they, you know, do decide that this grad zone is a little, it's just too much work to put on. Then if they do that, if they can't, if they decide not to put it on next year or the year after, that puts us in a position, should we follow our charter and fund them, or should we just kind of let it fly? And you know, this whole idea of slow pace, you know, bring everybody together. I don't like the idea of segregating grads onto a certain part of the slope. Although it would be nice if we could get a shorter beer line. you might want to consider writing that in.
Any other comments? Let's take Andy first.
All right, I have one very quick for one in the Council Commission. Section number one and number two. I have this is $25,000 for a dollar issue, for a dollar sign, make that clear. And then section number one says $25,000 each common excellent year. Number two says $35,000 each excellent year. So if that meant to be a maximum of $35,000 total, then we should have parked all that time. But if we mean that the parallel structure is one of us, then the parallel structure is one of us. So my other question is under EMS. EMS will continue to offer and provide CPR AED instructions online. Call 911 on the call emergency and get emergency care. I don't understand what that means. They're supposed to provide on the call emergency.
Yeah.
And in particular with regards to 911, are they supposed to provide instructions regarding calling 911? Who are they supposed to cover?
I guess that's
and to piggyback on that, I just am wondering where this came from. Like, this wasn't anything we specifically brought up with them, was it, when we had them at a CORE meeting, or I'll stand corrected if it was.
This is from their application.
It's from the what?
From the application.
From the application?
So maybe we can verify with them what they mean by these things. Those are wording problems. I think it's not controversial.
Right.
Yeah. I agree. I don't think we should find the thing about.
So you're suggesting that you do a body reading right now?
Thank you.
I have a question for clarification on the Cornell University Program Board. We got 24 and 7 and some more exclusive, or I'm just irritated by the fact that there's 5% twice. So does this mean that in total they should devote 10% to co-hosting other organizations events, or is there a reason?
I think they're the same thing, they just need to have to be better worded.
Well, one of them said said the number two productions and the other didn't specify it.
So you will reconsider combining 4 and 7 in
that's quite a presentation. I think it might have happened on our copy, if
happy that Sean has all these different charities and we're going on to have a discussion about it. I think that we're looking at something that printed revisions that should have been removed. So everything you see in light italic text should have been removed and should not print on paper. Is that correct?
I don't think so.
I think it wouldn't have anything for something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it might be printing all revisions in all forms.
Okay, but in any case, I think this is a draft, so he will go back and consider the wording. And it has to be, it had to be presented at this meeting in order to be voted on.
Yeah,
so.
But I think
right, if he already correct them, then yeah. There's no point in bringing them up. I think our time is up.
I just want to make one last quick point, logistical. Yes, I do. I just want to make sure that each heading is exactly what the byline funded group is. So, for example, it's not Slope Day, it's the Slope Day Programming Board, which is something that needs to be clarified in point number one. It's not the Slope Day Programming Committee. It should say Slope Day Programming Board, and I would prefer that it should say that in the title. Rather than sporting events, I would rather it say athletics.
Yeah, I think it's that.
Okay. And I think that was it. But just verify that whatever the group is, whatever the application said, is exactly what our Appendix B says. Okay?
Yeah, I think those are from the previous version. It was wrong from, like, 5 years ago.
Okay.
So our time is up. Thank you, everyone, for staying so long. And the meeting adjourns. Thank you. If you have more discussions, just come over here.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.